Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It's Sal Capaccio.
Sal!
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 Capaccio.
On WGR.
Okay, another hour. Our final hour. At least until Sunday, unless just something comes up in pregame or something. Talking together about Bills Ravens. We'll have picks next hour. Sal Capaccio is here with us, Mike Shope and the Bulldog, for our roundtable every Friday here on WGR. And, you know, the preface, everybody knows it. It's the 9-3 Bills and the 10-2 Ravens. This is a game that not only is important in the standings, it seems important symbolically in terms of the style of the two teams and what the Ravens are and where the Bills, what the Bills want to be or think they are perhaps. And of course it's the quarterbacks, one of whom is the favorite to win the MVP award, kind of just incredibly this year in only his second year, first full year as a starter, Lamar Jackson. Sal was on yesterday. You were on yesterday and I'm like, what have we not talked about? And I have to admit, I'm thinking that way again here. Like, there's no particular part of this game that I think the starting point is look at us and look at where we are, and really we go from there.
Well, I think it's really now. I think the later this gets in, I keep finding myself thinking a little bit about Jackson and Allen, you know, in last year in the draft class and where they mm-hmm. are right now, and it's been an interesting evolution of that class to this point, if you want to call it that, because when it looked like immediately Baker Mayfield was just going to skyrocket and be the guy, right? And then, you know, Sam Darnold had some really nice moments last year when he finally came in. And then Lamar did some nice things late in the year. You know, you still were kind of wondering.
He was the last of the guys to start a game.
Yeah, and then he made the playoffs. And right. then everybody said, oh, the blueprint's out, because the Chargers knew how to beat right. him and put seven defensive backs on the field. But, you know, and people forget, you know, all this credit given to the Ravens, which I give them credit too for what they've done, but they did pass on him in the first round, and then they went and got him with their second pick of the first round. When I think they traded back in on the second pick, 32 mm-hmm. overall. Mm-hmm. But I find myself thinking about that a little bit more as the week's gone on, just these two guys sharing the same field. I don't think the weather's going to be conducive for either of them to kind of put up kind of numbers where you say, look at that, you know, guy and the passing stats and things like that. But I do think we're at a point where we can say both are really rewarding their teams for taking them as their guy in 2018.
And by the way, didn't the Bills trade with Baltimore to get Edmonds?
They did. They did.
So Baltimore traded down and then...
And then came back in, I think.
Maybe again. Either picked yeah. someone else or traded down again. I don't remember.
But I'm sure that storyline's been talked about, but you know, when you get through all the X's and O's, how the Bills going to stop the offense, what are they going to do on their own offense? It's starting to become a little bit more about individuals for me as this game gets a little bit further on.
Well, let's stay there for a minute then, because while look, Bills fans overall are giddy about Allen and the state of things right now, and that's understandable. That's reasonable. Jackson is the favorite to win the MVP award. And when we talk about that draft, it's my understanding, and you should know better. I would think you would know better than I would. I never knew the Bills to have had any interest in him as a prospect. Is that correct? Is that what you think too?
It didn't appear that way to me. It didn't appear. McDermott basically indicated they did evaluate him this week when asked about him. I think if we go back to Monday or Wednesday, whichever it was, I think he kind of alluded to, yes, evaluating him and, you know, through college. But it never, ever appeared to me that they were at all interested in Lamar Jackson as their pick.
What does that mean to you, if anything?
Well, I think you have to remember they just came off Tyrod Taylor.
Yes.
And they, I think that they felt they needed a pocket passer, even though obviously Allen is more than that with his athleticism.
Right.
I don't think it would have been a good look for the organization, or probably even something they really wanted to invest in, going from Tyrod Taylor to Lamar Jackson if you were going to get rid of Taylor in the manner in which you basically jettisoned him.
In a good look, in the sense like you're trying to, you're sort of establishing that you want a different style
Correct.
Of a player.
Correct.
And then, you know, Jackson. I mean, we're all stereotyping a little bit when we talk about these guys. But
yes. I thought anecdotally that was one of the reasons why I never thought that they would consider Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think it would have been very easy to criticize them for making that pick and moving on from Taylor. Like, you've got a guy that is, like, this style player, at least, right? Good runner, questions about his passing ability. And why not just draft other stuff? You know, like, you build around him. What are you doing? So I think they wanted to clearly, I think, style-wise, get away from that. It's funny where they've ended up.
They ended up drafting someone who's a good runner, and there are questions about his passing ability.
He's leading the league in rushing touchdowns for quarterbacks.
That's
right. It's funny how it turned out.
And look, I mean, it could also be, you have to remember, like I just said a minute ago, everybody passed on Jackson. He wasn't taken until the last pick of the first round. So I think it's fair to say that most teams thought that he was the fifth of the group, if not maybe the fourth,
there
right?
There was some flaw. There was something.
And the Bills were drafting high enough where they wanted to be high enough to pick a guy that they believed in. And obviously they just didn't have him ranked there for whatever reason. Yeah. Whether that is because of the Tyrod thing or the style they wanted, they just believed that Josh Allen would be a better quarterback, just like most other teams did, because four others who wanted quarterbacks took a guy before they took Lamar Jackson.
Well, we know how, I'll just say, bad the teams are at getting that right. And it's not like they should be able to perfect it. It's not a system you can perfect. But it's just the number of mistakes that get made in the draft determined by how players do in the league. I mean, there are numerous examples of that every year in the draft. So the thing for me, at least in the last few years, is simply don't trade up, right? Don't trade up, because this way you trade down, you get more players. I don't know who else Baltimore got in the course of those trades, you know, trading with the Bills or whatever else they did.
Who did they take? Hayden Hurst, was it? The tight end?
Okay.
Right? I think that's who it was.
I was going to say it's probably a tight end.
I think that's who it was.
They drafted tight ends like crazy.
They might have drafted two in that draft.
Yeah. I do think, though, for me, Mike, part of it is, and I'm going to say this, and it's going to come off as, well, Jackson can only run one system. I don't think that. I think he's a talented football player that, you know, he could be in other systems and maybe be doing really good things. But I do think that the Ravens taking him has really helped him more than maybe most other organizations in this league. But I also think the Bills taking Allen and the way they've structured their organization and how they've cultivated him has helped him. And I'll say it this way. I think if you put Josh Allen on the Jets, I do not think he's having the progression he has right now. I just think the organization's a mess. I think if you put Josh Allen on the Ravens, he probably is, because the Ravens are showing that they know how to kind of get from point A to point B and create structure in what they're doing. They're doing with Allen very similarly, I think, the Bills, what they're doing with Jackson, what the Bills are doing with Allen, and they're on this path. If either one of these guys went to the New York Jets, maybe even the Cleveland Browns, I don't think they're much better off than they were maybe a year ago or when they came in the league. From where I sit, I really believe organization matters, and these two guys are showing proof of that.
Mahomes is also an easy example.
Great example.
Yeah, and I think, too, that what that tells you, I think that's really a fact. And what it tells you, too, is you think about the guys over the years that didn't make it. And
yes.
Whether or not.
So much matters.
So much.
Yeah.
That's right.
You have to have two things. Well, three, if you include ability and the mental part, like who the person is. You want to have the right team. And then you also want to be drafted early enough so that the team is definitely going to give you a shot, and it's going to be a while. Right? You're picked seventh overall like Allen is. He's going to get a couple years at least.
Right, yeah.
Before, unless it's just a disaster, before they end it. And, you know, those other guys in the first round, you're seeing with Jameis Winston, who's had an up-and-down career, lots of turnovers, but also lots of numbers, lots of plays, no playoffs or anything yet.
Right.
But, like, they're into year five, right? And
that's
they're
right.
Still, who knows? What right. They're not even saying what they're going to do. They haven't done anything yet, and it's still, like, I guess, perhaps being decided what they're going to do. First overall pick. So you're going to go as long as you can. Where Jacksonville went with Bortles, you're going to go as long as you can for these high picks. And if you're a guy like Minshew in Jacksonville or who knows who else, like there's other examples, Duck Hodges, guys like that, you need an emergency. you need a disaster to happen. You need injuries to happen on your team to get any chance.
And almost as soon as you have two bad games, you're in danger of losing the job.
You're probably back to being the guy who was not good enough to be a high pick.
Right. I feel like, even though it's not a quarterback, I don't want to change the subject severely here. I think the Bills did this with Fred Jackson. I think they were always trying to replace Fred Jackson.
Yeah,
because Fred Jackson was from Coe College and just was not pedigreed.
That's right.
So, like, well, let's go get this guy. Let's get C.J. Spiller. Let's get Jackson's probably better than all
of them.
Right. Right? Like, I don't know. Lynch ended up having a really great career after he left here.
No, but it's a good point.
But they were, it seemed to me, pretty eager to replace him.
But I've felt so much this year about how I've really, for the first time, guys, I've seen the difference up close and personal between how an organizational structure and cultivation can matter. Like, I don't think I ever really realized it. We can say it, and even I can say continuity matters. It just goes above and beyond that. This is the first time I can say, boy, I've seen it now. Like, I've seen the difference between the first, I'd say, 7 years I've covered this team in some capacity here to this year, which really bridges the last 3 years, right? And how Sean McDermott has built this program. And how now when I hear people talk about like the New England way or the system and the organization and the Steelers, I believe they have that. They really do. And I know they got Ben, but I think they have that. I think the Ravens have that. This is the first time, I think in other years I'd say, well, yeah, the Bills got some players and they might have a good coach. But this is now that I've kind of, my eyes have been open to really the difference between a structured, in sync organization with a plan and vision versus the ones that didn't, when I never really appreciated that difference before.
Are we talking about something more than just having the same coach in place for a long time?
Yes, I think we're talking about the coach and the GM and really the ownership kind of all being on the same page of, I think it starts with ownership saying, we hired people that we believe in, we're going to give them the resources to do their job. And then those people basically not having their own agendas, own egos, and sure, they're going to argue about something, they're going to have a difference of opinion about who should, what, I'm sure that happens. But at the end of the day, it seems like they have the same vision on how they want this thing to look. And I think that matters a lot.
Well, there is a lot of up and down in the NFL, right? Like, less with a couple of those teams you mentioned, and you're saying, like, for the most part, you're saying that this is why, right? Like, the Steelers have this level of consistency and so on.
And the quarterback, of course.
Yeah, like, and there's truth. There's truth in that. We'll see what happens with the Bills. I mean, for me, it's still up in the air to see whether they're, like, going to be a consistently good team. We still have the matter of the schedule this year and, like, what's going to happen in the next month, what goes into even next year, right? Like, the Bears. By the way, the Bears are back above 500 with Trubisky on the field, if you guys noticed that.
Yeah.
So, who knows? It just changes all the time. And I think from this point, I'll say this about Allen. What I think the situation is with Josh Allen right now is, like, there's potential to win. They have a chance to win with him. He's shown enough for me to not want to rule out, you know, to say the least, really, the chance of them, like, winning. It's still to be determined how that really goes. And one of the things I wonder about with this is, like, what has happened around the league at the position. Because, look, it's not just people with a grudge or people who wanted to dislike him or the Bills or anything. Like, there were lots of reasonable people who thought this guy did not perform in college on even close to a level that would make you think he'd be a good pro. He would be a standout case.
An outlier.
At all time.
Sure. Absolutely.
If he was, like, a consistently good pro player. And there's just sort of, like, this period of fluctuation at the position in the league for whatever reason, probably a few reasons, that really make you wonder, like, what is going on? Quarterbacks running the ball, rules changes we've talked about, you know, like, you can't really hit them like you used to be able to hit them, and they're protected in certain ways. Downfield pass interference and all that kind of thing that's proliferated. I don't know, like, none of that is meant to take away from his success so far. But even Jackson or anybody, like, you wonder, what's lasting in all this? What's lasting in all this? Like, does Mayfield not have a great shot or even just a shot of, like, getting there again?
Like, it's see, that is where I come back to. They're just a mess as an organization, mm-hmm. and I give him right now. I give him less of a chance than mm-hmm. to get back to where he was and sustain it. He might have a half a season or another season along the way, like he showed up in last year and had. But man, are they going to fire their coach again? Does the GM seems like a guy who just wants to hire a yes man. He got run out of a very good organization in Kansas City because I think that was the kind of guy he was. And he goes to Cleveland and says, I want a guy. He hires Freddie Kitchens because he'll do what I say, basically. And now they got Freddie Kitchens just a horrible leader. I mean, I can't see how he doesn't scream CEO of anything, right? And I think because of that, Baker Mayfield will always be spinning his wheels trying to get back there.
Unless they do step outside of this
Absolutely.
Idea you have that they only want to hire a yes man, and they get someone who's innovative and good and smart and that works.
Or but someone I think Ron Rivera would be a good coach there. Like someone to just steady the ship. Just steer it, steady it, give you organization, structure, hire the right people. And I think someone like that would be good. I think maybe Mike McCarthy would have been good. I'm not a big Mike McCarthy fan, but he's kind of like that, right?
Either way, he's on his third head coach already.
That's exactly the point. Right. And how many
starts?
Right, and you might say the same thing about Darnold. I mean, neither one of these guys definitely have to get fired, right? But I don't think the Jets are going to get anywhere with Adam Gase.
Agreed. 100% agreed. And until those organizations, I think, figure that out, I think we're always going to be sitting here going, well, you know, that Darnold, because I'm a big Darnold fan. I think if you put Darnold in Baltimore, they're not going to run the same system they run with Jackson, obviously.
Right.
I think you put Darnold in Baltimore, and I think even if you put Darnold here in Buffalo, given what I just said with how they've cultivated in the structure, I think we're talking about Sam Darnold as, boy, this guy's really good.
Yeah.
Whereas now I'm like, yeah, he shows flashes of it. I think he can be there, but I don't see the consistency yet.
Well, this is a critical point. I mean, if you can say that Darnold, like if you're saying I could substitute Allen for Darnold, and I think we'd be in the same place.
I do.
Then you're saying a lot. I mean, that's saying a lot. That's
because I credit the organization with how they brought Allen along. I think Josh Allen has more raw talent than Sam Darnold, but I think it takes him longer it's taking him longer to get there because of where he came from, the raw aspect of, you know, coming from Wyoming, the inaccuracies and stuff like that. But he's caught up. He's caught up a lot quicker because of where he is, I think.
Well, I'm really impressed with certain things the Bills have done on offense that have happened this year that have contributed, I would say, decidedly to their record. And that is the run-pass ratio stuff we've talked about since the very beginning of the season. I went to the first preseason game and sat up in the upper deck. I love to do that. We get done with the pregame show. I go up to the top and watch like the first quarter and they threw the ball. And people, some fans were like, hey, they're throwing the ball. Like, come on. But they went to the regular season and threw the ball a bunch of times in a row in the first game and then won that game, pulled that out. So that's part of it. It's also this transition since the Browns loss to more no huddle.
Mm-hmm.
And to what extent do you think that's like what they want as their identity and not just sort of a counter to what had happened just before that? Like, do I want to expect the Bills to be sugar huddle, no huddle most of the time going forward?
I think it has a lot to do with how Josh Allen operates and his comfortability. It's not necessarily what they want as their identity. I don't think Brian Daboll says this what I prefer for my identity. I think he wants to just do what's best to win. Now, Sean McDermott is a defensive-minded head coach. We know that. We know he's okay with, if we win 10-9, that's okay. We win 10-9, we play good defense, don't turn the ball over. So, you know, maybe we can debate that. I think the transformation is because they feel Josh Allen is better this way. They feel Josh Allen is more comfortable this way, and they're giving him the opportunity to do the things to push him along.
What have we got? We've got Daboll. This is also when he goes upstairs.
Yes.
Right, yeah.
And they're at the line of scrimmage, and is he doing like a Sean McVay, a Jared Goff here, and here's what I see?
Not quite, but yeah, it is kind of like that because he's helping him identify, but that thing shuts off at 15 seconds,
15
right?
seconds. But they're already not exactly lined up. Like, guys are not in their stances.
Correct.
But by 25, 30 seconds.
Yeah, like, he's giving them some answers to the test. I mean, he is. Yeah. He's giving them definitely some answers right there. But, I mean, I can't remember how I read it's different. Like, what McVay is basically just calling the play for him. I think that's the difference, which is, excuse me, Daboll's helping him identify, but Allen has the ability to call what he needs to call based on what Daboll and him is telling him and what he sees. Where I don't think that's the case with McVay as much. McVay is basically saying, hey, we're running this play. Look at this.
Throw it to Cooper Kupp.
Exactly. That's exactly what's happening.
How they're lined up.
I wonder, I'm not watching for this, but are defenses in those situations scrambling at 15 seconds? I wonder if
like
that's...
trying to change what, you know, look they gave.
It's a good question, and I think, did you guys ask Micah Hyde about that? The challenge of running maybe a no huddle? I thought you did. I'm not pretty sure. Maybe you didn't, but he made a great point. Lots of defenses can't do that because you don't know if they're going to snap it at 10 and you're playing games back there.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right. Whereas the Bills can actually do that a little bit because Micah and Jordan can kind of both play weak or strong or whatever and free and all that kind of stuff. And so teams may try that, Mike, but I don't think you do that much because you're at the risk of, if you start moving and playing with guys back there, all of a sudden Josh Allen snaps the ball and you're caught.
Did you listen to him on Watching Tape the other day? Hyde?
I don't think I did.
It's great.
I listened to, what did he say? I listened to everything. I don't think I
Mike,
heard
Mike
that
Mike asked
one.
Him about film study, and Micah said, you got 5 hours? Because I could really go on this. And then he talked for about 5 minutes uninterrupted.
I have to go back and listen.
It was really in-depth. It was really
great.
That's
awesome.
I wanted to know the other – a week ago, whatever, Elliot. I think it was Elliot I was thinking about. I wanted to know if players watch tape on other players, like how to tackle them or certain habits that they show, not just schemes. Like, how far beyond that does it go? And he got into, like, all the different things that you see. I mean, he seems to be a junkie for that. Like, I say that as a compliment. I'd love a guy like that. You know, a coach would love a guy like that. Guys, watches tape all the time.
These guys, they watch the most minute things you would never think of. I mean, ask Eric Woods sometimes about like how he can maybe identify a defensive tackle if he's going to come upfield or try to be a gap controller just based on the leverage of how he's leaning, like on his stance. Like, it's crazy how these guys can do that, and they do. They pay attention to those little tiny things that these guys do. You know, if you line up with maybe if a tackle's lined up with his left foot just slightly kicked back behind, it might be a tell that it's a pass play. And like Jerry Hughes is watching for that on film, which is incredible.
More with Sal Capaccio this hour. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog here. We'll have the update for you. Bills and Ravens Sunday at 1. Now, Sal, take it away.
Yeah, I got to tell you a little bit about Excelsior Orthopedics Express, guys, because if you are sidelined with a sprain, a strain, or a break, you got to get to my friends at Excelsior Orthopedics Express. It can happen to all of us, whether we play football or my son's playing floor hockey now. You know, Bulldog son plays hockey at a high level. All the things that we do in life, we could get hurt. We could just get hurt falling on the ice if that happens. Well, guess what? Excelsior Orthopedics Express is one stop, one copay, and everything you need, like imaging, casting, or splints at Excelsior Orthopedics Express. Also, by the way, Excelsior Orthopedics and Buffalo Surgery Center are growing and looking for talented professionals to join their team. They currently have openings in athletic training, physician assistant, physical and occupational therapy, nursing, and administrative roles. To learn more about exciting and rewarding careers with Excelsior Orthopedics or Buffalo Surgery Center, text ORTHO, that's ORTHO, to 550-550. Text and data rates apply.
That he's just more decisive as a runner during this win streak, where if it's not there, whether it be off play action or off of number of progressions, he's not thinking about, oh, do I need to stick around and make a play with my arm? No, he's just taking off and he's running and he's making all those highlight reel plays and piling up these numbers. That's leading to a record-breaking season.
Evan Washburn is the analyst there on One Bills Live. I don't know about that. How does anybody know what's in his head when he starts to run? Like, is he giving up on the play or is he not? I see Jackson Plenty really waited out. His feel for the pocket seems really good. Allen, too. I think they both are guys that give the pocket the appropriate amount of time, at least, I would say, in general. He's not just like, this is a point that gets made about a guy who doesn't have it figured out. He just goes. He's not afraid to just go. Right. Well, that's what you would say as a criticism.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was Allen last year. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I've watched, I don't know, 6 Ravens games in full this year. And I don't know. I don't really sense that he's just in a big hurry to take off. Evan Washburn there. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog, with Sal Capaccio. One or two quick things from the update that I'm thinking about. Just this hockey one. I just wanted to slip in here before we run out of show today that the Sabres are tied for second place in their division.
Yeah, I was looking at the standings the other day, and they're not. It looks like a get in by, via the division year, not wild card.
You wonder how long it's going to take teams like the Lightning or the Canadiens or the Leafs even to
figure it out.
To get there. I mean, right now they're 15 points out of first, tie with Florida. The other is, I don't know if you're thinking about next week very much yet. This game is so top of mind. And
I've thought about it.
Connor ruled himself out for this game in Arizona yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. Like, they're obviously in contention, but I'd wonder about him for next week because of that. Like, they didn't take this up to the limit like they you see teams do. It makes me wonder if he's hurt.
I've been thinking about Juju in the same sense.
Mm-hmm.
Juju with his knee,
yeah.
He just started running this week. And I don't know. I mean, maybe he comes back next week, but it just seems to me that this thing could be lasting.
Didn't he sound this week at some point like he might even shut it down for the year?
I heard maybe you say that the other day, and I don't know. I didn't know what you were referring to when you said it. Was there a quote? Did he say something in the locker room? I don't know.
Yeah,
something like that?
Something about just like, we got to sort of look at this.
Okay.
But it's his knee. It's not the concussion anymore from the Browns game. My guess right now would be that they both miss the game against the Bills, but it's too soon to know.
They are really good on prime time at home, the Steelers. Like, traditionally, amazing. I think, I told Howard that. Howard then looked it up, and I had it too, but I think it's they've won 10 of the last 11 or 8 of the last 9 primetime games at home, or 10 of 11 overall and 8 of 9 at home, something like that.
Well, Monday nights, they have this crazy streak going. They beat the Dolphins, and did the Bengals game also happen on Monday night?
Might
home
have.
Game? Like, they have a long winning streak on Monday night alone. This is a Sunday night game, so.
And I think an underrated aspect of piggybacking on what you just said, Mike, is there's no guarantee they're going to Arizona and winning. I mean, Arizona can beat them.
No, it's a one-point spread.
That's right. And if they come out of that game with a loss, I mean, that makes next week's game, win or lose for the Bills, that's not a swing game anymore, flip-flop standings game. It's the Bills still have a two-game lead on them. That's a big game for them.
Yeah,
definitely. You've got the Steelers, Titans, those are the two teams now. It's only those two teams. It's 7-5. No longer Oakland. Oakland is 6-6 with Indianapolis. And the Titans have who?
Raiders.
They're at the Raiders. That's right. Thank you. They're at the
Raiders.
Well,
that's the thing about this playoff race is every year we look at the in the hunt, and the Bills are usually on the one side of the graphic in the hunt trying to catch people. And we talk about how that goes and how many teams need to win or lose. And this year, I think it seems to me, when people talk about it, they say, well, you got to watch, this team could catch them. Well, guess what? You need two teams to catch them. They're in fifth. They're not in sixth. And as much as one team can catch them, you're still safe. You're still in that situation. And to be honest, everybody's playing each other.
Yeah, right? Tennessee and Oakland playing now affects that.
And Tennessee and Houston play twice
before
the end of the year. They're all playing each other.
You could still see Cleveland. They have the Bengals twice still, and they have Arizona. And then one other game. They have the Ravens again.
And then the Ravens. And we don't know what the Ravens are going to be playing for at that point in time. And I think the Bengals are starting to play some decent football. And Andy Dalton's back. And I would not put it past the Bengals to beat the Browns in one of those games at least.
That's this week. And that line moved towards Cincinnati. It opened around 10 and then was down to 7.
Mayfield's hand, a little injury there. And he finally got a wrap off of it. So, they're kind of OBJ talking about next year already. People asking about where he's going to be and they may be kind of turning the page already in Cleveland. Mm.
Sal Capaccio with us, Mike Schopen, the Bulldog. Sal, do I want to bet all my money or just half on Frank Gore under 44 rushing yards?
I'd say just half. This is a run game. The Bills actually, that's the way the Bills have to win this game. The Ravens' run defense is their weak spot, and I say that delicately. I mean, they're still good at it, but their run defense, they're giving up close to 4.6 yards a carry, and if you watch that game, I know you said you watched a lot of them. Did you watch last week against the Niners?
Every play.
The Niners gashed them outside zone, off tackle, outside zone. Like, and I know Mostert had a monster game. He was like 150 on the ground, but that was a game in which you knew they couldn't throw, and they still ran the ball in bad weather against the Ravens, and I think that's how the Bills have to attack them. So I think Frank Gore has an opportunity here to break that number.
I wanted to get to that. Well, that's interesting because on the edges, like when we talked about this earlier, my thought was the edges, that's not Frank Gore.
That's right.
It's Devin Singletary. So, I mean, I know you're not going to exclusively only just do the one thing.
Correct.
But still, what I'm wondering, though, is personnel groupings. And we've talked a lot about that this week with the three receivers versus two tight ends, 11 personnel versus 12, and whether or not the Bills might feel like in this matchup it would be smarter to go with what San Francisco used last week that worked.
That's right.
But I'm wondering about, like, you're making this point about extra DBs, and their DBs are good, so you want to keep them from doing that, but wouldn't I want to run on them if they do that?
It's funny you say that. I was thinking about that. Here's the difference, though. Their DBs are really good tacklers. They're very good athletes. They're very aggressive. Their linebackers are aggressive, but the reason they get beat on the edges is because they step up, they get caught in the wash, they can't get there. If you have DBs out there, those guys are filling holes.
Okay.
That's the difference. I thought the same thing, went back, actually talked some people about it, and that's kind of the way it is. They have an aggressive nature defense, so that's why they're tough up the middle. First of all, they're good up the middle, but those linebackers, they'll fly. They'll go boom, boom, boom. If you get on the edges, they get caught, and it's tough for them. You get those guys, like, their DBs out there who are filling gaps and filling holes and coming up hard, they're closing those gaps quicker.
So that's kind of the opposite of what you maybe have been taught
Correct.
To think, right?
Like, absolutely. I think it's a great question. I thought
out,
the same thing.
Get a bunch of DBs on the field and run it, and that's going to be to your advantage.
I think
advantage.
Traditionally, Bulldog, the reason is because we think of that as, well, if they're going to have small people, you gash them and you go big. That would be, to me, going up the middle, you know, going and running between the tackles more and taking, hey, if you're going to put DBs in the field, I'm going to go with those guys. Now it's, even though I want their linebackers in the field trying to flow sideline to sideline, because the way they play, it's tougher for them to do that.
I'm going to use this opportunity to say that was time to construct the game plan, which is brought to you by Admar Construction and Supplies, equipment you need when you need it.
What about Lee Smith? When is that fifth catch coming? So Gore is 44 rushing yards.
Hey, it might be this week. He's going to probably get a lot. I would think he'd be on the field a lot for this type of game.
Yeah, you want to show Baltimore, the tight end capital of the universe, that you have your tight ends. The Bills are not the lightest when it comes to that position. They got a lot of bodies. Singletary's prop is 68 rushing yards. Gore's is 44. Allen's is 40.
Wow.
Lamar Jackson's is 80. And Ingram's 64 for Baltimore.
It's interesting watching Jackson run. Now, there are some boots once in a while. He does some naked boots. But generally, he's got an escort. Like, generally, when Allen runs, he may put it in the belly and pull it, but there's a guard pulling. There's somebody that's with him running when he runs. And then he gets in the open field. He gets to the second level. He does all the crazy stuff and highlight reels, right?
Spin moves.
Yeah, I mean, there are some times where there'll be some boots, but they do protect him. Like, people talk about all the time, this guy getting hit. And I generally believe that those hits take a toll. But they do a great job protecting him by scheme. They'll pull the guard. They'll pull the center. They'll do things. They use an H-back. He'll get out in front of him. They protect him when he's running.
Yeah, it's really, he's one of the few players ever that I probably don't blink when he's in the open field.
Right.
You just stare at him, you know? We were talking about running backs from the past one day. It was that top 100 list the NFL Network is doing. And, like, Barry Sanders was this, and certain of these guys were like, wow, you know, and this guy is one of those guys for me. Just, like, he is the
Agreed.
Best the best runner in the league, I think, watching him operate like that. So
he leads all NFL players in yards per carry close to 7. The next closest is, like, 5.9 or something. They have, by the way, 3 of the top 5 guys on that list. Mm-hmm. It's Jackson, Edwards, and Ingram all in the top 5. Devin Singletary, by the way, is 3rd on that list. So, I mean, he's very efficient running the ball.
A lot of those plays, the defense just does not know who it's going to be.
That's right.
I mean, it
it's
won't
exactly
often
right.
be Ingram and Edwards at the same time, but it's always Jackson, one of them.
I know I speak for millions of people listening in our audience right now that we needed to get to eye discipline, and we finally
eye
did.
Discipline.
Yes.
So, you know, I'll tell you, it comes back to, I really think they're so big on fundamentals and things like that. Option football, tight ends are the key. So basically, the way you want to defend the option is somebody has quarterback, somebody has running back, everybody goes to a guy. But the way you kind of determine where to go sometimes is you watch the tight end. If the tight end down blocks and steps down to block, generally you're going to come upfield. That's what's going to happen. If the tight end steps out to block, you're going to have to slow play it a little more on the pitch. That's generally the read. Now, I'm not saying they do that every time. I'm not saying that the Ravens, that's the exact system they run. But generally, that's where eye discipline comes in. You have to identify your guy and say, oh, quickly, boom, he down blocked. I need to go. I'm going to get, because he's creating the edge. oh, he stepped out. I need to kind of step out with him because here comes the ball on some sort of option around the end. So that's where the eye discipline comes in. The eye discipline comes in on, boy, when he puts that ball in the belly and he pulls it out, he's like a magician sometimes. You watch him, I'm like, I don't know who's got the ball. It's crazy.
More with Sal Capaccio this hour, our weekly Friday roundtable here on WGR. Quick word for Omaha Steaks, the holiday gift that families across America have loved for more than 100 years. Omaha Steaks, America's original butcher. Right now, they're sharing an amazing limited-time holiday offer with WGR listeners to get a jump on your holiday shopping. Go to omahasteaks.com and enter the code WGR in the search bar to order the favorite gift package, the gift everyone will love for only $69.99. Order now and you'll receive 4 6-ounce bacon-wrapped filet mignons, 4 premium pork chops, 4 Omaha Steaks burgers, 4 perfectly browned potatoes au gratin, 4 made-from-scratch caramel apple tartlets, an Omaha Steaks signature seasoning packet, and for our listeners with this offer, a 6-piece cutlery set and cutting board. All the food and the cutlery set, yours for years to come, only $69.99. Omaha Steaks, the most tender, flavorful, and only steaks of this quality come from Omaha Steaks, America's original butcher. Guaranteed to be the most tender steaks you've had. All orders backed by an unconditional 100% money-back guarantee. Don't wait. The offer ends soon. Go to omahasteaks.com, type WGR in the search bar for the favorite gift package.
Just, it's a part of the job. You know that this is possible. It's part of the job, and it could happen. So just kind of coming in and making each kick when you get the opportunity and moving on to the next one.
Chase McLaughlin. Joe, I'm sorry. We were talking about something else in here. What did he say?
He is talking about going from team to team as an emergency kicker. That has been fun.
Almost
so
came
far.
To the Bills.
Yeah.
Do you think that they tactically claimed him to keep New England from getting him, or that they were thinking they wanted to replace Hauschka?
I don't think either. I think they wanted to put pressure on Steven Hauschka.
Okay.
I don't know this. My read of it is, if they had been awarded Chase McLaughlin, I think they would have kept Steven Hauschka on the roster and had a guy there in case these struggles continue, but not automatically just say he's done.
Right.
Carolina just did that.
That's right.
Carolina just did that.
And now Vinatieri is still on the Colts, but he's hurt.
Right.
So they're not doing it to send a message to him necessarily, and I think he's been afforded the respect of probably not doing that. But I don't think they would have gotten rid of Hauschka if they'd been awarded him. It would have been somebody else on the roster, and then they would have basically said, hey, get your stuff together. We got a guy here.
Right.
Yeah, you don't see that very often, and I wouldn't want to say that it was like not the Bills' own original idea, but it is Carolina, and Carolina just did that. Their kicker, Sly, missed big kicks in New Orleans. They should have won the game in New Orleans. They brought in another guy, but Sly stayed on the team. Like he kicked last week.
It is an interesting thought about New England. I never thought about that, what you said. I guess, I mean, they could have thought that way, but
I think someone suggested it to me on Twitter. I don't want to take credit for having that thought independently, but just something across my Twitter feed at some point made the point. Like maybe they did that.
That's a tough thing to do in the NFL, though, because you got to create a roster spot.
Right.
If you're trying to keep a guy from a team, you know, if you're just doing it for that reason, I think you have to have a reason to have him on your team, right? But that is interesting. So we'll see. I mean, Hauschka has to kick better. The other part of that is, how would it look if you got rid of Steven Hauschka literally like 5-6 months after you gave him a contract extension? Mm-hmm. I mean, it just I just don't think they're in that mindset right now to do that.
I don't know. I would not. If it happened, what would I think? What would I say? It would be like, good for them.
Right.
You would.
I might think kickers are voodoo. You know, like maybe a little like goaltending. Like it just, you know, you're in a groove. You're good. It's all set. And like, haven't we seen, I mean, Matt, I always screw up his name. I want to call him Matt Carpenter. Dan Carpenter went through the same thing. He was excellent for Miami, got in a skid, got cut. The Bills brought him in. He was great, and then he lost it. You know, like it just happens. I don't know.
A lot of kickers are struggling this year. New England still does not have one on its roster. They had Nick Folk. He had an appendectomy. He was out. They brought in Kai Forbath last week. He missed an extra point for them Sunday night. So then he was cut, and they were, or are, checking on Folk to see if he's able, physically able to kick, in which case, apparently, he will be their kicker. If not, I don't know. Like, they don't have anybody else, so they would have to get somebody else or go without.
Well, and Flutie's going to be here, so they can't use him to drop kick anything, okay?
Good
was he leading the charge or something? I don't know if that's the case. He'll be here doing something, I think.
He's back. The cereal's back.
Yeah.
Right.
So, really cool. I mean, here's to Sunday.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. A little windy out there, but I'm glad it's not going to be raining and snowing. It's a nice test for the Bills. I don't think it's defined. Look, if the Bills lose this game, I don't think it's a referendum on their season or their team. I think it just means that the Ravens are better right now. That's all it means. The Ravens are better right now. And if the Bills win this game, I think we have to have serious conversations now about where they fall in the AFC, and that's scary to think about, but it's true.
Especially if New England doesn't get a favorable result for 100% them on Sunday.
I mean, you have to start thinking that way and talking about it.
If they win, we're all going to want to stare at the Patriots game.
Oh, yeah.
If they lose, no one will want to watch it.
That's right.
It's just okay. Right. But it's just another Patriots game. What's the 4 o'clock game, friends? But if they win, let's see what happens.
Yeah, that was – Howard had a fill-in-the-blank this morning. He said, a Bills win for you would, and my answer was, make me pay attention to the Patriots game
That's
more.
It.
That's the answer.
Right.
That's it. Yeah. See if you can get that game on in our booth. No one's been able to put the late game on in our booth.
Oh, I'll see what I can do.
Oh, it is – they do keep the TV on in the owner's booth next door.
Right.
And sometimes one of us will go over and turn the channel to the game we want. It's just over there. It's
hard to see. And other times there's bowling on.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, whatever. Nice. Whatever. We got a job to do.
Just happens. You know, whatever. Yeah, that's right. It's fine. Want to I do want to mention all the sponsors here for this Football Friday Roundtable, by the way, with Sal. We're always grateful that he comes in and grateful to our sponsors. We had a client party last night, so let's give these people some props. The Roundtable is brought to you by Arthur Pressman, West New York's traffic attorney, yourtickettojustice.com, by Northwest Bank, increasing the value of you, by the Lockport Outdoor Store, high-impact gear for hardworking men and women, by Belknap Heating and Cooling, go green and save with electric heat pump solutions from Belknap, and by Admar Construction and Supplies, equipment you need when you need it.
And one of our top sponsors and a sales sponsor is Outlet Liquor. I love to shop at Outlet Liquor. Great selection all the time. Wine and spirits, especially if you're buying quantity, you can save a lot of money. Get a lot for your money at Outlet Liquor. Check out some of their current deals right now in the penny section. You have gift bags out there they're putting together for the holidays. Whatever. Fill stockings with the likes of Bourbon Cream, Alberta Rye Whiskey, Grey Goose Minis, Irish Whiskey, Mix and Match, No Limit. These are great little gifts for your adult friends. Double up for a penny in the penny section at Outlet Liquor. Another holiday favorite is Bailey's. Bailey's Irish Cream, available in 1-liter boxes in several flavors: salted caramel, chocolate cherry, vanilla cinnamon, or espresso cream. $19.99. Save over $10 on a 1-liter box of Bailey's. Get great everyday low pricing on the 1.5-liter size bottles of Woodbridge, Yellowtail, and Behringer wines, as low as $7.99 a bottle when you buy a case. Great deals all over the store. Outlet Liquor, just minutes from the Galleria. When you're out shopping there, keep Outlet Liquor in mind. Proud partner of BrokenSticksHockey.com and the Sabres. Outlet Liquor, what's your outlet?
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.